It's Pittsburgh chapter, oral history 2, interviewing Mr.
Edgar Wallace
on January 15th, 1992, and I am here with my partner, Shalomit Bistocki. Mr. Qualwasser, may I have your father's full name?
My father's name, Jacob Qualwasser.
And your mother's full name?
Pearl. Her middle name was Teeny. Maiden name was Little.
And your brother's name?
Robert P.
And your sister's name?
Helen.
Mr. Qualwasser, you have referred to the fact that you had a very musically inclined family.
Yes.
And I think there's been some celebrity there. I understand that your father had invented...
He invented a test for musical talent that had no bearing on how much training or musical instruction a person had. It measured innate talent. In fact, training and studying an instrument would really not help you in the test. It was innate talent. And I believe that it was called the Qualwasser-Dykema test. And I believe they still use it in public schools. The value of it is that it tested rhythm, pitch, acuity, memory for melody. And they would, for instance, for pitch, they would play two notes that were, one was higher than the second one, let's say, and then they would get closer and closer together in order to tell whether the first one was higher or lower. And they got so close that the average person wouldn't be able to tell. That somebody who had very good sense of pitch could score very well. And then they had a rhythm, I would call it the rhythm test. They would play a rhythm, then they would play a second rhythm, and you were to say whether the two were the same or different, just answer S or D. And those two would get closer and closer together. They were done, I don't know what the instruments were, but they were calibrated so that they were scientifically accurate. And for instance, if a person tested very poorly in rhythm, a public school system would not encourage him to play the drums. Or if he scored poorly on pitch, they wouldn't encourage him to play the trombone or the violin, where you have to make your own pitch rather than a trumpet or a piano where it's all, you merely play the keys and that's what you get. But it was quite different. My father was very interested in that sort of thing, testing. He also took pictures of people, certain lip formations. They were more suited, say, to the sousaphone than the clarinet or the flute. He tried to check that sort of thing so that it would be a guide for people selecting musical instruments.
Did your father play an instrument?
Yes, piano. But I understand he could play all instruments, but not, you know, really well. In the Army, I believe he worked with Army bands and that sort of thing.
And your mother also played piano?
She played the piano, yes.
Did she play professionally at all?
Not really, no. She gave private lessons, but never was on the faculty or university or anything like that.
Now, And you have referred to your sister as a child protege?
Yes.
Is she still active?
Yes, she is. Yes.
With?
Well, she teaches, she's head of the string instrument department at Temple University. And she concertizes, she was also, until recently, concert master of the Philadelphia Ballet. And I can't think of some of the groups that, it was a string quartet in New York City. And she also plays in Vermont. In fact, she was on television recently with Kuralt, who interviewed this group in Vermont that is like a summer festival. And she, we saw it interviewed on television.
And did you or your brother play any instruments?
I took piano lessons from my mother. And I can't say that I excelled. And I also took clarinet lessons and played in the high school band, such as it was. But my brother, he, so to speak, he wanted equal time, really just to harass my parents. So I asked him what instrument he wanted, and he said the drums. And they refused his request, so I don't believe he ever took, he may have taken piano lessons for a short time, but he never liked it, and he never, they didn't force him, and it ended almost as soon as it started, you know. Yeah.
Could you tell me in which order, birth order, are you?
I'm the oldest. My brother is 17 months younger, and my sister is 5 years younger than I am.
So the atmosphere in your home was very musical, but it wasn't pushed on you?
Not on, I don't think it was pushed on my sister either. She did this very willingly, and she showed talent at a... One thing that was discouraging to us, we would be at a certain level, and my brother and I, on the piano, and she, without any, without a, like at the age of three, without any training or anything, would play the same piece without any music, without any coaching or anything, and so we could see that it was unfair competition.
Well, it's good that you didn't have to compete then.
Yeah, that's right.
You had said that one of your college professors influenced you in your decision in architecture.
Yes.
Could you tell us how he influenced you, what it was that, that broke your interest?
Well, he made architecture seemed very interesting. He was very interesting. As I said, he lived in China for many years. He was a architectural historian. And he took me on a tour of the department. And of course, after I enrolled, I'm not sure how long he stayed after I enrolled. I don't think he was there till for the 3 years I was at Syracuse, but he was the one who influenced me.
Is it a name that we should know?
No, his name was Walter Taylor, and I forget at this time where he had his training or where he taught previously to that. I don't remember very much about him.
Growing up in Syracuse, was there much difference culturally or politically as compared to Pittsburgh? I mean, can you compare the two cities for us? Culturally, politically, maybe lifestyles being different? They may not be.
I think they were very much the same. Of course, the two, our neighborhood was oriented toward the university, and I think the population might have been different. This was a so-called blue-collar town, and Syracuse had a wide range of industries, Solway, chemical, and I don't think there was any steel making there, but they had, I believe that Carrier had a big plant there, and they had a diversity of factories and businesses of that sort. But I think that more than the cities being different, the times were different.
Would you like to speak to that? How you find the difference?
I think I did say before that it was an innocent age. We had simple pleasures, and I did say that there was no television. I remember that radio was very popular. People used to rush home in order to catch a program. In fact, my father was very much a fan of the Lone Ranger. I don't think he would miss a program if he could help it. But we went every weekend practically in the summer. We went on picnics and combined fishing trips within a short distance. Kids didn't go to Europe as they do today, or Israel. There was no Israel, but and things were difficult because it was the let's see, I was born in 29, so before adolescence, it was the Depression. Excuse me, I was born in 23, so by the time 1931 came along, the worst years, 31, 2, and 3, we were aware of what was going on. In fact, as I recall, my father and his faculty friends talked mostly about the unfairness of their salaries, how low they were, and the people I mentioned before, the news, particularly had quite a struggle. I don't think he ever made more than $3,300. And my father, who retired, I think in 1945 or 6, never made more than $5,000 as the head of a department. So it was quite a different time from today.
Aside from the lower salaries that they made then, because there was a Depression era, as a child, were you very much aware of the Depression around you, or did it change your lifestyle? Or even after
I don't think so. I didn't know any people who were out of work, looking for work, or on public assistance, really, probably because of the neighborhood was middle class. I know we used to do canning. It was just the thing to do. People canned. We would go to farmers markets, and we would we've made our own root beer, but we would can grape juice and tomatoes and other things, and I think everybody else did too at that time. And I think my mother traded piano lessons for part of the groceries that we had from a young man whose family owned the grocery business. I don't believe my father ever bought a new car until 1939, even though we had many, many, many cars. My father was an easy, I don't know what the word is, but if in those days the salesman would bring the car to your house, and my father had no resistance. He would easily buy a car, you know, if the pitch was a good one. And so I remember some years we may have had two cars, one after another, not at the same time, but he did a lot of the fixing himself. He liked to tinker. And it was just a different kind of a life.
Yeah. And then the war years came, and did that have any effect on your family?
Well, my brother and I went in. In fact, we met at the induction center. We went in practically the same time. I may have gone 2 weeks before he did or not. And that was in March of 1943. And my brother, for what reason, I don't know. He wanted to be in the roughest, most dangerous branch possible. He tried to get in the paratroops and was turned down for physical reasons. But he did get into the infantry and was in a, trying to think of what they called, I think they were called the Rangers, and they actually landed in Normandy before the June 6th invasion. And I would say within 2 weeks he was wounded already. You know, he was wounded. And so my parents were very concerned about him. I was more fortunate. I got into an ASTP program, which was a college training program. They would take people from all different branches, and I went to Mississippi State for so-called education. But and then I went into the engineers, and I was in a headquarters company, and we built bridges. And it wasn't combat. It was after things got settled a little, we would build prisoner of war camps, permanent bridges. In fact, we built one in Cologne across the Rhine. And it was a very interesting experience. I suppose it's not right to say you enjoyed the army, but I did.
When you say you built, did you actually go to the different locations yourself?
Yes,
so
yes. We were stationed in Cologne for a while, and Bonn, Germany. But our company seemed to always arrive too late. We would unpack, pack, and move on again because things were already in control. But not only there, but then we were sent to the Philippines and Japan. In fact, we went on, I think it was a 45-day trip by boat through the Panama Canal. And when we got to the Pacific, the war ended. And so we were just really killing time from that point on.
So when you entered the Army in 43, you went to Mississippi State for how long?
Oh, no, I went to basic training. And I'm trying to think. I went to camouflage school. Where else did we go? But I had maybe three basic trainings because they didn't know where to place us. And then I went to ASTP. And during the Battle of the Bulge, they dismantled the ASTP program because they needed a lot of reserves. And most of the people from ASTP went to the infantry, poorly prepared, I would say. And but we were sent, I'm trying to think of anybody else that I knew at the time. I think I was the only one. Went for engineering basic training, and then joined this company and went overseas as a unit.
Okay. You also have referred to the Horns as friends.
Is he in Betty? Yes.
Did you meet them after the war years?
I'm trying to think of when I met them. It was, I don't even remember the circumstances. He was in the glass business, and we did a lot of stores at that time, storefronts, and perhaps somebody recommended him, or I think the first thing he did was something at our house, and I don't even remember what that was. But that must have been perhaps 1960.
So you didn't meet him as a refugee, you met him
He was already had his own business. I understand when he first came over, he worked for his, I think he was a nephew, and he would actually deliver the glass on a streetcar, or the mirrors, they built mostly, did mostly mirrors. And I think of that, he had quite a struggle getting started, but he was a very astute businessman, and people liked him. So later we did motels and showrooms, and I tried to get him in wherever I could. Some of those people were very loyal to him through the years.
I brought him up now, thinking in terms of, were you aware of what was going on in Europe with the Jewish population?
I'm trying to think if we did. I think so. We saw, when I was in Aachen, Germany, one of the things, images that I'll never forget is that we saw people. I don't think they were, I'm quite sure they weren't Jewish. They were Poles who were pushing push carts with all their belongings in them, all on foot, no trucks or cars, coming from the east to the west. That was after, it was in the latter stages of the war. It might have been over by then. I think it may have been.
And you had mentioned that you the Army Engineering Corps, built prisoner of war camps. Aside from Germany, did they build them stateside as well? And
no,
can you tell?
No.
Moving right along. You met your wife on a blind date.
Yes.
Okay. May we have her name again, please?
Ann Laws. Her maiden name was Miller.
And her educational background or her family background?
She went to Pitt and studied, I can't think of the word, education, but it has to do with children in grades, maybe 1 through 6, and even kindergarten. She taught kindergarten in, I think, grades 2 or 3. Her parents, neither went to college, and she's an only child. I think I did say something about had quite a struggle because her father, I think, left for a veterans hospital when she was 3. I believe he was a fire captain in the city of Pittsburgh. I think he enlisted in World War I before the war. He was regular Army. And he was wounded. In fact, he received several medals. He trained people in the cavalry. He has medals for valor and action. I'm not sure whether he was gassed or what happened to him in the war, but let's see, that would be 1933 when he went to a veterans hospital. And I think he had had several hospitalizations before that, but from 1933, I think until World War II, maybe 43, I think he was hospitalized, I'm not sure. Then he was home for a short time and worked in a defense industry job. Then he took sick again and never came home there after that. So they had, the mother had quite a struggle, and I did mention they had roomers and boarders, and she sold coal to the neighbors and other people. Before she was married, she had worked as a buyer for a small department store in Jeanette. It was called Ratner's. And I understand she was very good at her work. And she came from a large family, her mother, 9 children. There were 10, but I think 9. And her father, too, had, I think, 2 sisters and 1 brother. Her mother came from Greensburg, and her father was a native Pittsburgh.
And when were you in Lois married, and where were you married?
We were married in 1951. June. Her aunt, who was a her mother's sister, was a very wealthy woman, and she planned the wedding and made all the arrangements. It was in a place near Greensburg on Route 30, and later it had summer theater and a restaurant and other things there. It was very nice. And incidentally, her mother had 2 sisters that married Gentiles. In fact, one was Walter McVeigh, who was definitely Gentile. And the other was a Mrs. Coombs, who married a man much older than she was, who was a, you may call him a coal baron, and also president of a bank in Greensburg, and quite a man in the community.
Your own parents, how many brothers and sisters did your father have?
My father had one half-sister, and then he had a sister and a brother, yes.
And you said that your father rebelled against religion. Do you know why he felt he should rebel?
I think it was a matter of, it wasn't a matter of principle, or I don't think it even had anything to do with religion. I think he was sort of turned off by the rabbis that he worked with or encountered in his sideline at one time as a an organist, and he played the organ. And I think he sensed a certain falseness and insincerity in some of the rabbis he worked with, and perhaps presidents of congregations, or he never really had one particular story or incident that he cited for this.
Did he come from a more traditional home, though? Or
yes, he did. His, I believe they were Orthodox. My grandmother was Orthodox, yes.
And your mother, how many brothers and sisters did she have?
My mother had one sister, and three brothers.
And where were your parents educated?
My folks met at the University of Pittsburgh, where I'm not sure she, I think she was a student. I think he was already perhaps a teaching graduate student at that time. But they both went to Pitt. When my father went to University of Iowa for his PhD, and I'm not sure whether he took courses or taught at Columbia, but he had one summer's work at Columbia University. One thing I miss is my parents are both gone, and all of the brothers and sisters are gone. So if I want to find out something, I have nobody to ask anymore.